Hey, it's Craig here, episode 244 of the podcast. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope you're really, really well. We're moving into that December period and it's all rush, rush, rush. And I don't know why. Why are we rushing around? We don't have to. We do it every year and everyone gets stressed around this time of year when it's really a time just to relax as usual and look on the best part of life rather than wishing days away and not looking forward to tomorrow. I've got a really few special episodes that I'm going to do with a friend of mine, Denny Fleming. And Denny's a great, really well-known boxing coach, so I don't have that many combat people really listen to my show, but I hope to get more because it's something I'm really interested in, and particularly boxing. I mean, it's such a wonderful sport and, you know, been around since the very first Olympics, and so it is a great sport. And Denny has had such a wonderful career doing so many good things for so many people in the boxing area, and particularly with PCYC. Now, PCYC, for those of you that aren't in Australia, is Police Citizens... What is it, Dan?
Youth Club.
Youth Club. I always knew it as the Police Boys Club. Okay, but obviously there's more to life than just boys. And so there was a lot of... Denny will chat a bit about this, but it was built to really help youngsters, youth, keep a lot of youth on the straight and narrow, and we all know that boxing is one of the greatest sports for that. So Denny has done so much for the world, and, you know, we always talk about the world being a better place. Now, there's something else about Denny and why I'm inspired by him, besides him trying to teach me a little bit about boxing, which is... He's very kind because I'm very bad. But so as I was saying, Denny got diagnosed with cancer a little while ago, and we'll talk about that. And he's been given the advice that it's pretty severe cancer. But his positivity is something that has inspired me. But we'll get into that and talk about that. But we're going to do a series because Denny's about to undergo some chemotherapy, so we're going to talk through that and some of the things that he's been doing to sort of assist him in that. But how are you, Dan?
Good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. So you're here at our wellbeing home in a massage chair, which is pretty cool, and you're about to have sauna and spa and ice bath, which has been part of your treatment, really, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
But tell me, how long have you been coaching boxing for?
Since I was probably 21, 22, and yeah. I'm 49.
40, so, yeah, for yeah. a long period of time. Did yeah. you box yourself?
Yeah, I had a couple as, not many, I don't even, you know, only a couple as a junior.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, yeah, nothing.
And what is it about boxing, what got you into boxing?
Well, I actually grew up with a boxing ring in my garage. My dad did a bit of boxing in his time and just was a, he was fanatical about it and just, yeah, as a kid it was unreal,
yeah.
you know.
Was
yeah.
he good? How was your dad as a boxer?
Oh, you know, he didn't say much, so, you know, yeah. I think in those days, like, almost every kid boxed, do you yeah. know what I mean? And then he went through the national service, he boxed in the national service and then came to Sydney for work from the bush and trained out of Redfern for a while, boxed out of there and, yeah, so...
So have you mostly worked at the PCYC?
No, I had... So after my injury, I was 19, I had a head injury, severe head injury. And so I couldn't play sport, like rugby league or whatever I was doing then. I couldn't do any more contact sport ever again. So I just started coaching a few friends in my garage.
Right.
And then the next minute, I had... friends that actually were all right.
Right.
And so we ended up taking it serious, and then next minute the whole neighbourhood was in my garage.
And what area? In Sydney?
Yeah,
so we're
Belrose,
in Sydney.
Belrose.
In Belrose
yeah,
in Sydney?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. And how did you learn to coach?
Do you know? I don't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Honestly, I was blessed, I'll say this, that... my dad taught me a bit, and he was good. And then he put me in the hands of another guy, Grant Chapman, who had a really good IQ for boxing. And then after that, I did a bit with Brucey Farthing, and then I ended up living with Arnel Baratelia, who was ranked number one at the world at the time,
right.
You know, as a professional. And I was sort of like taking them every morning for their runs and doing a bit of pad work with them and things like that. And I learned so much from, yeah, Mark Pitt as well.
Mm.
There's like, you know, that's, yeah, that was the basis of my coaching. Yeah, yeah.
And, it's a long career. Do you have a favourite fighter?
As in one that I've coached?
Maybe from the world.
Okay, yeah. Sugar Ray Leonard.
Oh, Sugar Ray Leonard. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So... above, I hear that a lot from boxing people. So above Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Muhammad Ali's my favourite human.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
Of all time. He was just, an incredible human. Sugar, he had everything. He had class, he had power, he could brawl, he could do it all.
So for my listeners that don't know boxing, what sort of weight was he?
Oh, he was multiple weights. I think he was I think 4, 5, six division world champion, I think something like that. I think from 60 kilo, he fought up to light heavyweight, which is around 80 kilo, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And you've got a gift for coaching. You know, I think anyone that knows you knows that, because I just pick it up, and obviously I'm around coaches a lot, but you have this gift of, like, I know how poor I am, but from the moment that you got me doing the pads, you made me feel good and wanting to do it more. So was that, do you think that sort of style, like, because obviously you would have coached a lot of coaches now, did that come naturally to you?
Yeah, that came naturally. Yeah.
Mm,
right. That just, because I'm a social person.
Yeah, okay.
And I just love people.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. So the range of people, like, you've had top fighters, okay, really top level fighters, right down, because you still teach at PCYC now, to people just off the street that come in, and then you develop courses for, you know, for people in the fitness industry and that sort of stuff to do boxing. So is it just boxing that you like? Like, who do you like working with the most? What gives you the most excitement?
Before I got ill, I loved working with the Fit for Life program at the police. I loved that more than just equal to coaching fighters. I loved working with the kids in trouble that were, you know, had a bit of behavioral issues or something like that. That was my favorite time of the week.
And tell me about that. I have the belief that 99% of the world are good people.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you find that these kids that were...
Yep.
What did you find they needed? What do you think?
What I found just with me, to be listened to.
Yeah, right.
You know?
And to be heard.
Give them time.
Yeah.
Give them time.
Yeah.
And like when I would train them, I found just start really simple things and make them feel good.
And do you have, you probably have numerous success stories. You don't have to name names, but can you think of, if you think of some of these troubled kids that you started to work with, like what you've seen, because you would have seen them grow now.
Yeah, there's a few stories there. Yeah. As in, like, not successes in what they... The way I look at success is not, I'm a bit like, as a coach, I was more worried about where they were going to go with their career.
With their life?
Yeah.
Or their boxing career with or their life?
With their life.
Yeah, like
finishing
I agree.
Finishing their trade, finishing their degree.
Yeah.
That gave me more satisfaction.
Yeah, and I love that. And look, I know there's a lot of coaches that listen to this, and particularly the main sport I work in. I think boxing really lends itself to, you know, we've got historical things where coaches have changed the life. And, like, yeah, I mean, I think that the coaches often need to understand just the important role you have. that every athlete is a person first.
Yeah.
And so what if they have a great football career or rugby league career or boxing career? Are they really going to make the world a better place? That has to be, I think, part of what a coach is thinking, them as people. And it sounds like that's important to you.
It's so important, you know, it's because, and no matter what age, because as you know more than anyone, it's a very fine line that make it through and get money.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've had. And I don't consider myself nowhere near an elite coach, nowhere near it. I'm a home coach, and I'm good with people.
Yeah, just, you know, Denny's a very humble guy, but you would be considered an elite coach because you worked at the representative level as well.
Where were we going then?
Well, I mean, just with your humility, you've trained some pretty successful fighters.
Yeah.
If we think Kay Scott,
I started Kay, but she's gone on, you know, and achieved massive things out after she left me.
And it's interesting with her.
She's with probably best coach in Australia now, Joel Keegan.
And she just, Denny's got us to, because of our support of Denny, he's got us to a couple of boxing nights, so which were really interesting to me. One down at DY, we went to see one of his young fighters fight, who was fantastic, and she won that night. And then the other night where Kay had her first professional bout, but she's a Commonwealth Games representative too, wasn't she?
Three-time.
Yeah. So what? I mean, in your experience with the athletes that you've worked with, at that elite level, what's the difference between someone that's got talent to success?
That's a really good question. And that's all you take Kay for instance. It's just like mental toughness and discipline. And, you know, you get hit with such upsets, you know, in your journey.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of talent and, you know, talented athletes, they don't know how to handle those decisions or whatever, and they go a different way or turns them off training, but the ones that make it just stay on that road.
Yeah, that real desire.
They feel the pain.
Yeah.
They feel it more so but they just have that ability just to get up the next day and continue the journey.
Yeah, and that's like, for if you're a player or an athlete listening to this, I see that as a difference. Even in the sport I mainly work in soccer, is that you can have all the talent in the world. It's your desire, your determination to work in when you have to work.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see people, not in a game situation, not close down the space that they need to close down, or not go that extra inch. What's stopping you? It's not your fitness, it's your decision.
Yes.
And you've found that with the boxers as well.
It's your want. Like I remember when I went to, I was lucky, I went to the Ukraine, and that opened my eyes. You know, like I was watching the Russians and the Ukrainians and in their teams, and I was sitting down on the stairs in the morning and just watching all the girls that lost from you know, one of those two countries. They were there the next morning after they lost. They were out of the tournament.
Mm.
They were there the next morning doing their drills, doing their, like, you know, because they wanted to be pushing that A spot, you know. And it was unreal. That I came back a different person from that trip.
Okay, now I suppose most recently, you've had this diagnosis with cancer.
Yeah.
And just, I suppose I'll preface this before, the other day, just how much you mean to people. I saw on this fight night and Kay spoke so highly of you and the situation. And I know you get very embarrassed about what people say about you, and that's, I suppose that's just a lovely part of your character. But I knew that you told me you'd had this cancer diagnosis, but your positivity and gratitude for life is just inspiring. So, I mean, let's have a little bit of history. Tell us, when did you first get diagnosed with cancer?
I think I was about 45, 46.
So 3 to 4 years ago.
Yeah, that was my first bout of cancer. I got prostate cancer and it was straight away under the knife. Like it was, right. So now I'm 49, and then I was going back every 6 months. I have to get my blood tests, and you know that cancer was undetectable. Then next minute I had this dry cough, and I thought it was just something lingering on from COVID, or you know. And then so I put off going to the doctors because I wasn't sick. I just had a dry cough, and then I eventually went to the doctors. They sent me to, you know, get the scans and all that. And then I went back to get the results, and the doctor sent me straight to North Shore. Then, yeah.
Rural North Shore. Yeah. It's a big hospital here.
Yeah.
And then what did they tell you?
First, I had to do a PET scan and a biopsy. And first they said it was stage 3, lung cancer. And then once I got the results, I said, nah, it's stage 4 and it's gone all through your lymph nodes, in your liver and in your bones.
Right. You never smoked?
No, I used to smoke.
Yeah, oh, you used to smoke?
Yeah. I was a wild kid.
But you enjoyed it.
I loved it. Yeah.
Okay. Was it related to the prostate?
No, they said no. They said all that. I got a mutation too. They found out that I got some sort of mutation and... to be honest, I've been to that many doctors over the last few years, and plus my history before that, that I hear so much stuff that goes in,
yeah.
I can't comprehend it all, yeah. You know?
And it is, you've had the attitude, it is what it is,
yeah.
And this is where we're at.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things that I think you said to me when we first met was, I don't care if I've got 1 day or 100 days or 1,000 days or... 10,000 days to live, I want to feel good.
Yeah.
So you get, what happens to you mentally when they say you've got stage 4 cancer?
Sorry. I just knew. For some reason, I have to say, when I was walking in to get the results, I said these words to a person that took me there. I said, I feel like I'm going into,
get executed.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say.
Right.
I knew what was coming. So, when he told me, I just said, right. And I just thought of my kids.
Yeah. You know? Okay. So you've got 3 kids.
Yeah, 3 kids in my life. Yeah.
And how old are the kids?
My eldest is 21. Yep. My boy is 18, and my young one, she's 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're in this situation. This is, what year is this now? How long ago is this?
When
you got the stage 4 diagnosis.
No, this was maybe 6 months ago. Maybe a bit longer.
Yeah. So we've been working together for that period. So it's still quite fresh.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they handle it, the doctors, when they told you? Like,
no, you know, they have no emotion.
Right.
None at all. But that actually works well for me because I like, it's the hard facts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they've got to do their job. Like, Yeah.
Okay. And did you have... How low did you get after hearing that? Like, what?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Like, held it, like I held it together. And all I'm thinking, of, like, that were my words to when he told me. I said, okay, right. I just knew.
Did they give you, you've got this long to live?
They said the first time, I think they said 6 months. I think they said that. And then they put me on this drug called Tagrisso.
Yes.
And that had, for lung cancer, you know, that can give you an extra, I think it was 18 months extra. And he, the guy that I went and saw after that, he was different. He was very positive, which was a bit strange. He said, you know, in that time, new things are coming out all the time. Yeah. So I was in a really good head spot. And but that's not working. Didn't work with me.
Yeah. And this is why we're recording this now, because Denny hasn't had chemotherapy or immunotherapy. But just probably about 2-3 weeks ago, he went back, had some scans, identified that medication wasn't really working. They went back to that original diagnosis, but now we're going to chemotherapy, and then that starts on Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, besides Denny, you know, Denny and I chat, and, you know, every one of us, we're just talking about it then, every one of us has a terminal illness. You know, no one has beaten death. And we live our life thinking we're going to live forever. And this is something that I've talked about often, about being grateful. I haven't met anyone more grateful than you. You know, like Denny, it's just incredible. Like sometimes I wake up and think I'm having a bad day and Denny comes over. And yeah, it's inspiring. You really inspire people by this. Yeah. And you're open with it. And we've chatted, and Denny, before he met me, started on his own treatment from his own reading, which actually is backed up by some pretty good research. And that's, you know, if you've got cancer, a very low carbohydrate diet, cut out sugar, fasting, you're eating just once a day.
Yeah, once a day.
And then he's actually now hasn't eaten for a couple of days, so he's on a 48-hour fast. Because he splurged a bit on the weekend. We're just chatting about that. He does sauna, ice baths, cold showers, and all this has been shown to have some benefit. And tell me, how are you feeling?
I'll tell you. So, like, before, I was the biggest wuss when it came to cold. I hate cold weather. Yeah. You know, like, my perfect life would be live here, in summer, move to Cairns in winter. You know what I mean? Like, I just hate the cold. I was feeling like I had cancer. I was not feeling good at all. Then I don't know how I come across it. You know, I did some sort of research and people said, you know, that... Oh, no, Wim Hof said, you know, there's research says that it can shrink... Yeah, you know, cancer or, you know. But I just started doing the cold showers. I did it all through winter. And it gave me energy all day. It was like I was on drugs. And that's why I can't miss it now unless I'm sick. Mm. And then I'm lucky I come across you. And now we're doing the saunas, which I love, and the chair and the ice bath. And it's just, it's like a drug to me. It makes me, and I tell you what, that with the fasting, I've never felt, this is weird, but I've never felt more on mentally.
Yeah.
With the fasting, the baths, the saunas, I've never felt more mentally alert.
Yeah. And this is, and I've seen this with Denny. I was chatting the other day, the amount of athletes that I put in ice baths and how poor I am getting into an ice bath, because and Denny keeps telling me you've got to do it, but that's the research so strong now, not from the physiological recovery, which has always been there, but this psychological perspective, changing your state. You know, if you're there and you're in a terrible mood or you're feeling lethargic or anything like that, having a cold shower, if you don't have an ice bath, off you go. Now, an ice bath doesn't even have to be elaborate, you know. We get a few bags of ice. We've got ice baths here, but an ice bath could be a wheelie bin.
Yeah.
You know, or a bucket. You know, it doesn't matter. But it's really impacted you. Now, the doctors gave you advice. Yeah. Go out and do what? Yeah. What you tell them?
Yeah, no, like the doctors said, go out, eat what you want, drink, you know, drink what you want and do all that. And well, that's old me. Hold me. When they said that, I would have done that. But, you know, I've got kids And I, you know, while I'm here, I want them to see me happy and enjoying life. And that's what, as I said, that's what the fasting, the ice baths, the saunas is doing for me.
What's your biggest goal now?
Oh, honestly, my only goal is to see my daughter through high school. She's in year 7. That's my only goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how are they, the kids?
I talk to my kids every day. This, I've got to hold myself here so I don't get emotional.
No, it's okay.
But they're good. Yeah. Yeah, they're good. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're coming over to my house tonight for dinner.
I think, if you're out there and you're a parent and you hear that, you've got to embrace your kids every day. You've got to embrace life. You know, Denny, you know, wants to see his daughter, and just every moment becomes important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, in some ways, I just think we just live our life and we push things away thinking that we're going to be here forever, and we forget all the things that we can be grateful for. Yeah, and when you're in this situation, you know, one goal, and, you know, that's what we should pray for and hope for, Denny and his family. That goal can eventuate, because it is, you know, it is a beautiful, beautiful goal, and I see that in you. But how are you feeling now?
I feel
like
great.
You've got this cough.
Yeah, I feel great, and like I get acupuncture too, which helps as well.
You're still coaching?
Yeah, still coaching. I'll coach as long as I can, and as I said, not like, look, I don't mind if I don't coach fighters anymore. That doesn't bother me. Got to have a purpose.
Yeah.
If you don't have a purpose, then you get into a bad spot, and I don't want to be there.
Because you.
You know,
we've all been there.
Yeah. I've been there before.
You get up and you think, what am I getting up for? And I'll go back to sleep. So So gratitude, having a purpose is just it's, you know, it is really, really so important. You're really lean.
Yeah.
And this is the interesting thing.
Yeah.
That's not because of cancer.
No, my appetite's out of control, and I'm training and all that. No, that's because
we've added in strength training. Recent times.
I'm doing your program, and I love it, and I do it as much as I can. That's helped me a great deal. The strength. I've been fasting for a long time now. I was fasting before cancer, so hardly touch alcohol anymore. I only have sugar occasionally. I have fruit and that. So that's all from,
We've talked about journaling. Have you started writing a...
To be honest?
Yeah.
I haven't. I'm hopeless like that. I want to, but I just forgot.
Yeah.
I just completely forgot, but I should, and that's...
We want to hear the story.
Because
We're going to stop this episode now because I got to get Denny in the sauna. But we're going to document, if you're okay that, during this period. Like I said, he starts chemo Friday. We were just discussing that. We're looking at a little bit of research in that area about, you know, how to manage yourself through chemo. And we're going to sort of document that and see how he goes. But... So this is just part one of a few parts, because I thought, and I really thank you for being open about it.
Thank you.
And because there is a lot of people that get in this situation. There's a lot of people, whether it's cancer, whether it's depression, whether it's an injury or whatever, we have these obstacles in our life, and it's how we manage it, you know, that sort of stuff. I know how hard it is when you're feeling down and out. It's not easy just to pick yourself up. But there is light.
Yeah.
If you put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Is that your advice?
100%. Yeah. Like, you know, tomorrow's not guaranteed for anyone. That's the way I sort of, you know, and you just got to, live and embrace it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed that, but we'll be hearing more from Denny anyway. And as always, wherever you are, whatever you do, I hope you get inspired by that. You know, tomorrow is not guaranteed for anyone, so let's make the most of today. And as always, with whatever we do, let's just try and make the world a better place.